Taking Stock on News Talk.
Thanks to Skillnet Ireland, driving business success through innovative training and upskilling.
This is Vincent Wall with you on News Talk's Taking Stock. We're joined now by Piotr Zalewski, Turkey correspondent for The Economist. Piotr, you're very welcome and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me on.
Piotr, I suppose since Recep Erdogan came to power in Turkey, and particularly since he became president in 2014, there's been growing concern outside the country and I suppose inside the country in certain sectors as well about his increasingly autocratic political policies, his stained human rights record, and his growingly aggressive and erratic foreign policy, both diplomatically and militarily, with his neighbours, but also growing concern about his economic policies. And this whole concern has come to a head with his recent sacking of the governor of the central bank in Turkey.
That's correct. Now, Erdogan has actually been in power since 2002, or 2003, when he became prime minister. In 2014, he won presidential elections. That is to say, he became president. So effectively, he's been the most powerful man in Turkey for nearly two decades. And, you know, in his early years in power, he enjoyed something of a honeymoon with the West and with the European Union. That honeymoon ended a good few years ago. The relationship is marred by a number of crises and problems, some of which you alluded to, which is to say Turkey's rather aggressive foreign policy, its military adventurism. In its neighborhood, Turkey has staged interventions and military offensives in Syria, in Libya. It has engaged in gunboat diplomacy of sorts in the Eastern Mediterranean. And most recently, it backed Azerbaijan in its war against Armenia. And Mr. Erdogan has recently come under fire for his mix of rather unorthodox economic policies, and especially his management of the central bank. Now, I say management of the central bank because while the central bank is nominally independent, in effect, it has become an extension of the Erdogan government.
And he had placed in charge of the central bank only late last year a pretty hawkish former finance minister, Akbal, who tried to get to grips in his own way with roaring inflation in Turkey and trying to keep the value of the Turkish lira as high as possible by raising interest rates, raising them pretty sharply over recent months. And that's what stoked Mr. Erdogan's fire, I suppose.
Correct. So one of Mr. Erdogan's rather unorthodox, extremely unorthodox views on the economy, or monetary policy, is that high interest rates cause high inflation. Now, to most economists, that is a bit like challenging, the laws of gravity. It's taken for granted that it is low interest rates that tend to stoke inflation, not the other way around. But Mr. Erdogan, for years has been committed to this view that in order to bring down inflation, you need to lower interest rates. And that, in many ways, has contributed to a boom and bust cycle in for the Turkish economy, where you have a series of rate cuts by the central bank, which then send credit, cheap credit, gushing through the economy. Brings about higher inflation. That also brings about devaluation of the lira. And then inflation tends to become so high, and the lira tends to lose so much value against the dollar that abrupt rate increases become necessary. And this has been, you know, the story of Turkish monetary policy for a good few years now. And this was just the latest instance of what you referred to. Last year, Turkey, you know, underwent another currency crisis. The lira lost, if I recall correctly, by the end of the year, around 20% of its value against the dollar. Inflation surged, and Mr. Akbal was appointed as head of the central bank to administer what Mr. Erdogan himself called, you know, the bitter pill, which is overdue and necessary rate hikes. And so he hiked rates, I think, by cumulative 875 basis points. And this, I think, is something that Erdogan saw as excessive. He, I think, had tentatively agreed to having Mr. Akbal administer some of the, you know, bitter medicine. But it was probably the latest rate hike that Mr. Akbal imposed, and I think that was on March 18th, that sparked Erdogan's fury. And on March 20th of this year, after the central bank hiked interest rates by 200 basis points, Erdogan simply sacked Mr. Akbal. Now, this isn't new either, because Akbal is now, or was, the third central bank governor to be sacked in under 2 years. But the latest reshuffle and his ouster was, I think, a huge shock to investors who bought into this story that Erdogan had finally reconciled himself to orthodox monetary policy, and that Akbal would stick around and stay the course, bring down inflation, stabilize the lira. And so the market reaction to his firing and to his replacement by someone who was a relative unknown was quite shocking. And in a single day, Akbal was sacked on March 20th, and the day that markets reopened in Turkey and across the world, the lira lost about 10% of its value against the dollar. And that, I think, you know, tells you all you need to know about the level of disappointment by international investors.
And that action on his part, and it is only the latest in the series, as you point out, Piotr, but that action on his part to sack a hawkish central bank governor who seemed to be trying to deal with the problem quite aggressively, I presume is only going to fan the fires, because inflation at 17%, I think, at the moment is unlikely now to be tamed. The value of the lira could continue to fall, and overseas investors are going to be very reluctant now to lend to Turkey.
That's correct. So inflation is at, I think, 16.3%, which is the highest in years, although, you know, inflation has remained in double digits for quite a while. Those inflationary pressures might be easing in the short term, but in the long term, especially if the new central bank governor does what he is expected to do, and what he is expected to by none other than Mr. Erdogan, which is to say cut rates, that is going to put yet more pressure on inflation and on the lira. And just today, the central bank held its first monetary policy meeting since the new central bank governor was appointed. His name is Shahab Kavcıoğlu. And instead of raising rates, which could have reassured investors at least somewhat, I think it would have been a symbol, rather symbolic gesture by the new central bank governor that he might be somewhat committed to monetary orthodoxy, the bank held rates steady. In addition to holding rates steady, the bank removed an earlier pledge that it had made to tighten policy. So under Akbal, the previous bank governor, The bank, was strongly committed to fighting inflation, strongly committed to stabilizing the lira, and new rate cuts did not seem to be imminent. With this central bank and with this central bank governor, it's very likely that easing will begin later this year. And I think there's quite a bit of trepidation among foreign investors. We see that in the value of the lira. Under Akbal, in the first few months of the year, the lira was in fact one of the best performers among emerging market currencies. It now seems likely that if the new bank governor delivers the rate cuts that Mr. Erdogan expects him to deliver, the lira might end the year as one of the worst performing emerging market currencies.
And it's clear that the president's economic policies, unorthodox as they are driven as much by politics as by trying to boost the economy. If inflation stays at this very high level, high double-digit level, Piotr, and if imports become more expensive because the lira is losing value, is that likely to cause any economic and social unrest within Turkey, particularly with the many small business owners there?
Possibly. I mean, Turkish society and Turkish economy, in fact, has proved quite resilient over the past few years. I mean, you have to recall that this is a country that has not only put up with Mr. Erdogan and his crackdown on dissent and his dismantling of democratic institutions, but a country that has had to cope with an abortive coup in 2016, a series of terror attacks, now two or maybe even three currency crises in the last 5 years. And yet, support for Mr. Erdogan is relatively high. It is dropping, but it is higher than what, I think many outsiders would expect. Unemployment is quite high. I mean, it's at 13.4%, although there is quite a bit of hidden unemployment. Especially because of the furlough scheme that Turkey has come up with during the COVID-19 pandemic. One way or another, I think these social tensions, or rather economic tensions, will translate into social tension. This is a country that was used to a high pace of economic growth in the early 2010s, and whose economy has been sputtering for the last few years. If you adjust for purchasing power, then yes, GDP per capita continues to grow in Turkey. But in absolute terms, in dollar terms, let's look at it this way. GDP per capita in Turkey just a few years ago in 2013 was somewhere in the neighborhood of $12,600. Today, 8 years later, it is down to $8,600. And that, in fact, that same figure is where GDP per capita stood around 2007. So Turks are, at least in dollar terms, becoming poorer. And when you talk about imports, imports of Western goods are purchasing Western goods for many Turks is becoming very difficult. Food prices have skyrocketed over the past couple of years, and some Turks, and I'm not talking about middle class Turks who might want to buy, the latest iPhone. I'm talking about working class Turks who, want to be able to afford basic necessities. They're really finding it hard, increasingly hard, to make ends meet.
And Turkey isn't, from a Western perspective, Turkey isn't just any other developing country. Any economic destabilization there because of these policies over a period of time, it's a huge growing population, 85 million people, in that critical juncture between Europe and the Middle East, still a potential candidate for EU membership, although tensions are relationships are strained. And of course, with growing tensions between the United States and Russia, a critical juncture point as well, which Mr. Erdogan is well capable of exploiting.
Yes, and I think, it's not only Turkey's strategic position that should matter to the outside world, and it clearly matters to the US and to Russia, but also the fact that it is host to some 4 million refugees and migrants, which the EU, which Europe desperately wants to avoid having on its doorstep, rather, which Europe would prefer to have on its doorstep than inside its borders. And now, as you recall, about 5 years ago, when Turkey opened the gates to Europe for the millions of mostly Syrian refugees who have lived here since 2011-12, Europe had no choice but to agree to a deal with Turkey, which allows those refugees to remain in Turkey, or rather prevents those refugees from being able to cross the Aegean into Greece in exchange for financial aid from the EU. Now, Turkey has actually abided by this deal, but it still has tremendous leverage over Europe in that it can renege on that deal at any moment, and it has shown that it is capable of doing so. And so those refugees and those migrants westwards, again, and that would place a number of European governments under a lot of pressure, and in a way, the EU has no choice but to find a way to keep Turkey on side. Now, the economic crisis in Turkey obviously is a factor here because, the less money there is to go around and the fewer the job prospects or the fewer the jobs that refugees and migrants here can find, the more pressure they will be under to try to survive elsewhere. And so an economic crisis in Turkey, could resonate, or rather an economic crisis in Turkey could force many of those migrants and refugees to try to flee to Europe again. And I think that's something that the European Union certainly bears in mind every time, the discussion on Turkey is had.
Yeah, it sounds like we need to keep an eye on Mr. Erdogan's economic policies every bit as much as his political policies. And it doesn't sound like Turkey is even going to get some relief from Western European tourists this summer. But we'll leave it there. That's Piotr Zalewski, Turkey correspondent for The Economist. Piotr, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me on.
Taking stock on News Talk.
Thanks to Skillnet Ireland, driving business success through innovative training and upskilling.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, It's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times. And stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in. But you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro. Easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.